And welcome to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. And we've got a very special guest in the studio today. We're going to play some music first. But we've got Chris Riddall, who is a stonemason. And, you know, a lot of people maybe wouldn't think that making a stone wall is an environmental thing, but it is. And so we're going to be talking to Chris for quite a while today, I guess the whole show, about his craft, stone masonry, which, of course, goes back thousands and thousands of years. Yeah, of course, dry stone masonry, you know, which is obviously different from other stone masonry, but dry stone masonry just uses stones, just uses rocks, no cement, so it is a totally environmental approach to building. So so stay tuned for our whole discussion about that. We're going to start off with some music from Bruce Cockburn, and I think we're going to play his tune Prenons la Mer, which is a tune on the Further Adventures of album. So here is that tune now.
Afternoon light got the sun stuck in my eye. It's shouting from the river, then it leaps back in the sky. Prenons la mer sur les vagues solaires. Toi et moi parmi les esprits de la lumière. Morning in the past, you know I felt like broken glass. Now I'm feeling alright, knife sharp as a winter night. Prenons la mer sur les vagues solaires. Toi et moi parmi les esprits de la lumière.
Welcome to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. Welcome to the show. And that was Prenons la Mer from Further Adventures Of, which is an album that Bruce Cockburn did in, I think, 1978 or something like that. It's a great album. It's the album that has a tune called A Montreal Song, which apparently he wrote while he was in Montreal at some point. And, of course, Bruce also lived in Montreal for a while. On De Bullion Street, but now I think he lives in San Francisco. So you are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. I am your host, Ryan Young, and this is probably the last month that I'm hosting because I'm kind of leaving the show. And so it's my great pleasure to have not only a great dry stone mason with me on the show, but also my personal friend, Chris Riddall.
Hi, Ryan. How you doing?
I'm doing good. And so, yeah, so Chris has been a dry stone mason for, I think, over 20 years.
Almost 30 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's a remarkable thing. Of course, you know, I guess it goes back to Europe on some level.
It's everywhere.
Or everywhere around the world.
Yeah, I mean, Europe seems to keep a pretty pure approach to, you know, purist approach to the keeping dry stone walls dry, in that they don't tend to just pour cement or concrete on them to try to hold them together. But yeah, wherever they're appreciated in the world, I think people try to keep them dry as much as possible.
Nice. And of course, that's a very environmental approach to building, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you're not using concrete, cement products in any way, because you're just relying on gravity and the way that you structure, build the wall. If you use the proper techniques, they should hold for hundreds and hundreds of years without needing repair too much. Sometimes they do, but you know, it's a lot easier to put it back together if somebody hasn't poured concrete all over it.
That's it. And the stones are from the area, usually,
yeah,
right?
They've usually bubbled up from the earth in as close proximity as possible. That's ideal. Usually they're a nuisance to farmers in that, you know, they pile them on the edge of their field or in the center of their field, and you know, those are great people to meet because they're trying to get rid of stone. So if you're trying to build a field stone wall with the types of stones that just bubble up from the earth, it's great to get to know local farmers and bring those stones to the wall where you're rebuilding or building one from scratch. But of course, the closer the better. And of course, if it's right from that land, it's even better. Yeah.
And you know, when you walk amongst like the old farmland on the West Island of Montreal that still exists, like in Pierrefonds and Centerville, you see those kind of piled stones at the edges of old farm fields, right?
Exactly. So, you know, if there were farmers that still knew how to do dry stone walling, they might, or that were there hundreds of years ago or even a century ago, they might have stacked a nice wall. Sometimes it served a function to even keep your sheep in or your cattle, and you know, you're not cutting down trees or anything. There's not many trees when you have a farm field, so you're just, you know, and the stones bubble up year after year, and if you don't do anything with them, yeah, you end up with a big pile, which sometimes a dry stone mason will come and knock at your farmer door and and ask.
So, and when you see them just kind of piled, and I mean, obviously over time there may have been more of a wall there, but it has crumbled. But I would think that some of that stuff is more just piled into sort of a wall, but not the type of dry stone wall that, as you say, can last for hundreds of years.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes what you find around Quebec, I find, are very wide kind of consumption walls. I guess, you know, to build a slimmer wall that goes higher takes a bit more skill, and that's kind of where, you know, if you were a farmer, you may or may not want to build a wall like that, depending how close it is to your house. Sometimes they would, it's just a matter of pride just to have a little wall or a couple cairns or a little gate that's built with some skill and with some of the nicer stones.
And what is a cairn? Like, what's the word?
It's kind of, or I could call them columns, kind of, if they're framing a driveway. A cairn is usually by itself, and it's, you know, roughly a square or a circular structure that resembles kind of like a a beehive stuck into the ground sometimes if it's more round, or a sort of tapering towards the top usually to help hold it together. Sometimes about 3, 4, 5 feet high. Sometimes they're markers actually for trails. They exist all around the world, but it's a cairn.
And so how did you learn your trade?
Well, it kind of found me in a way, because I was studying fine arts. I love painting. I love sculpture. Didn't find I loved sculpture very much when I was studying fine arts or visual arts. But sometimes I think it was just that I was working indoors. And, if you go back further, I always needed to be outdoors. And I knew that from a young age. And fitting into an office or a job where I felt constrained and I couldn't move a lot kind of scared me. So I thought it was a good chance to try working outdoors by taking a job with a gardener, a very good English gardener who really understood perennial gardens and proper dry stone walling. And he was a master gardener actually from England, and he set up shop over here. And I learned the first, I laid my first few dry stones with him. That was actually like 29 years ago. And worked for him for a while, but we did also Unistone. And I didn't really like that because I just found it very, the interest of building a puzzle wasn't really there. You know, when you work with natural stone, there's this puzzle to be solved. And the stones kind of start telling you, in a way, where they need to go by their size and shape and little features on them. That was working around the West Island, a little bit in Westmount and Montreal West. And I also found sitting in traffic not so great because, I loved working close to home, and I also loved not working, 60 or 70 hours a week sometimes. So I went off on my own after about 5 years and continued the journey. And I also went to Scotland to visit a friend who had just fallen in love, I guess shortly before I went off on my own landscaping, like building walls. And I just would walk around these mountains that were surrounding Perthshire, or Dunning, and I bumped into an older gentleman who was rebuilding his farm wall with his dog next to him, and it just was, the most beautiful landscape and sort of vibe that you could imagine. He was just taking his time, doing it properly, and he invited me to help him, rebuild his wall, which I helped him for about 2 days, but I learned a lot in those 2 days. And that was about, back in late 90s or early 2000s. And since then, I've, met a lot of other great dry stone masons around here. Probably the few that, are between the border of Ontario and Montreal, let's say. Yeah.
And Scotland, of course, is a place with a lot of beautiful dry stone walls.
Exactly. That's what this older man was doing. He was applying these, building skills that have been probably in his family for generations and generations. And he seemed very keen to pass them on to somebody who looked as keen as he was, It's a... So I was sort of tapping into that tradition there by just stumbling upon it. So, that's kind of how it found me. It's almost like when you're looking for something, you're not quite sure what it is. Sometimes you just stumble upon it, and which was a different approach from what I had been doing in landscaping, which was with flagstones, which are a bit more quarried, and they come in a very square form already. He was working with the stone that was just bubbling up from the field and showing me, the big ones go at the bottom, choose a nice face, And, you know, that face will be sticking out to see, for everyone to see, for, well, centuries sometimes, and sometimes thousands of years, you know, so.
And how tall was his wall?
It was 5 feet, which is kind of, yeah, and that was a fence. And it had, this one was near his house too, so I noticed he had other ones around his field that looked like they were, you know, getting a little bit dilapidated, but this one was near his house, and it was 5 feet, so it went up 4 feet, just below your shoulders, and then there was vertical capstones lining the top course of the wall, which was the first time I had seen that, and which actually lasts longer, because you have all that vertical weight of the stones holding down per square inch a lot more than a thin stone laid on top would. Or, you know, you could try to lug a giant stone on top, but when you're, what's nice about stacking the vertical stones on top is that it's actually quite light for the mason to stack that stone up there, as opposed to trying to put a really heavy stone on top. But you kind of have the same result because they're all pushing down so much weight for that bit of vertical pressure.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize, but you can literally build a bridge and without cement, right?
That's right, yeah. So, you know, that's kind of a master mason's, you know, piece. First piece is to participate in building a dry stone bridge or an arc, because that kind of puts, it's kind of the toughest test and requires the most patience and planning and selecting your stones. And yeah, but when it's standing there, you can drive over it. So there was one built on a site where I worked a few years ago, and it had just been completed when I found out about this place. But
And the other question I had was the tools of the trade are really just the chisel and hammer.
Yeah, well, you can have an axe too to break this larger stones. Yeah, and you want something with a carbide tip, because it won't break. Well, it can break if you hit a stone you shouldn't hit it with. Yeah, you're not, I mean, when I'm working, I don't really use a saw. I guess the last time I used a saw was quite a while ago, but sometimes I use a grinder, but you want to keep that to a minimum, and it kicks up a lot of dust. And actually, you know, I just don't want to hook up to anything electrical or even use a machine. That's what's nice about that work, is the stones aren't giant stones piled by a machine. They've all been manipulated by you. You've probably picked them up and turned them around a few times, and it's an intimate kind of rapport you build up with your stones. I don't wear gloves, because I actually love the grounding effect. I think, I don't know what it is, but touching the stones and not kicking up a bunch of dust or noise.
And how do you move a really heavy one that you can't just simply pick up?
So you keep them on the best invention I think we have for moving anything around, which is a dolly, which is the wheel and lever, the lever put into one, basically. Or, you know, you can also use a really big lever, which is a pry bar, a big iron pry bar. And you can roll a stone. It's amazing how you can roll a stone. And you don't lift them right off the ground until you're placing them or putting them onto your bench to dress them, to work them. Yeah, and I have to say, you know, taking martial arts and learning various, you know, body-wise arts, you know, yoga and qigong even, they're always reminding you to keep square to the ground, not twist your spine when you're lifting something, and, you know, use your core strength if you are going to lift it off the ground. 'Cause if you you don't really flex your core, I think that's when people end up, you know, hurting their body, which is something I can't do and I won't do. And, you know, I think about it every time I pick up a stone. It's about being really conscious when you're moving something around. Yeah, and so far so good. It's, you know, 30 years and you have to keep your body. It is my number one tool. So you have to keep your body well maintained. And in the winter when I'm not, you know, building walls, I cross country ski and do a bit of a workout regimen to keep myself, get myself ready for the spring. And so that's how you pick up a stone or move a stone. And I believe in the old days they would have used a horse and cart sometimes like a sleigh. There was actually a sleigh on the ground that the horse would pull. And, you know, sometimes you use a tractor, but you try to really keep that to a minimum.
And is it true that, you know, there's not a lot of people out there with this kind of experience, so that you're all in high demand?
It is. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it takes a while for your name to get known and get out there. And, you know, you don't consistently have dry stone work sometimes in the beginning. So I'll go over to whetstone, which is with mortar. I used to have to do that more. But yeah, my heart's not in that. Sometimes people need a repair. So, and there's a lot of poorly done whetstone masonry out there. So if it's somebody you know and you don't want to see a horrible job, sometimes you'll step in there and say, okay, yeah.
And that could be just like repairing bricks then?
Yeah, well, bricks are you know, there's definitely lots of brick masons in Quebec. There's no shortage. That's usually what people associate with mason, you know.
Right.
They assume you do brick then. I mean, bricks are yet a simpler form. Your mortar is different from if you're doing it properly with stone. But it's the same principle. Yeah.
So when you say whetstone, it could be a stone wall, but it's got cement on it.
It's got, yeah, or in it between the stones. Yeah. It's not just stone on stone. If it's got cement on it, that means it was a dry stone wall and somebody poured cement on it. which happens a lot.
Right.
So right now I'm restoring a wall in Hudson for the St. James Church, and there was a, you know, it's harder to take apart because somebody poured cement on it. I don't know how many years ago, but when you're taking apart a dry stone wall, the stones are all, feels like they're all still breathing. You know, they're not gummed up in mortar, so it's a bit of work to chip that all off.
And is the technique, the idea of putting cement on a dry stone wall, that you just pour it all over and hope that it kind of like congeals and then keeps it all solid, or do they slop it into the cracks? Or,
well, okay, sometimes you will find dry, you could call them dry look walls, where there is mortar going up from the base between the stones, but they're not, the mortar isn't really visible. It's not finished. The joint isn't finished or as wide as if you're using if you're doing a wet stone wall. But basically, if they're pouring cement on it, it was usually to keep it from falling apart more. Sometimes they need some TLC, and instead of fixing it the way it should have been fixed, let's say in the dark ages, 50s, 60s, and 70s, I don't know. Around here, you know, it seems like that some of the really nice old walls were done, and then there was sort of nobody learned how to do it. Nobody was interested. I guess things got really industrialized, and you know, it's not an easy job. So I think a lot of people just found it a band-aid, which is what it is, to pour cement on top, which doesn't help the wall. It kind of puts weight in a bad spot. And when you have mortar, water can pool. And the benefit of a dry stone wall is you're going with nature. You're going with the flow. You're allowing water to flow through and away. You know, it's It's simple. It's kind of like a big stone sieve, but especially with when it comes to a retaining wall, a dry stone retaining wall, you're making a sieve. The water can go float through, but it won't damage the wall, because when it freezes, it won't expand. And if you put gravel behind it with geotextile, you're allowing the water to really drain sort of underneath the wall or around the wall. So it's
so you do that sometimes. You put gravel underneath.
Yes, crushed stone is essential. Yeah, your wall's as good as your foundation. You need, depending on the location, a foot to a couple feet of crushed stone. Yeah, even, you know, go even deeper if it's a retaining wall on the water. Since we've been having so many floods in the last 6 years, we've had, you know, 300-year floods in 6 years. And my neighbor, I built his dry stone wall in 2017 after that flood. And then we built it even higher in 2019. But yeah, you have waves coming right up over it. And if the stone goes deep into the wall or deep into the earth that you're holding, then the wall's basically unmovable. So yeah, I was watching waves in this recent flood just recently, a few months ago, coming splashing over the capstones. And it always makes me a little nervous when I see that, but it's a testament to how well that wall, that type of wall, can withstand flooding, which is how it's been used around the world actually for a long time. The more I keep my ears open, you know, to, like, on Quirks and Quarks, I heard about these walls that were found in BC by the First Nations in BC to hold water back a bit so they could pool. So the water would pool, and they would have
clam beds. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, it's our first building material, you know. So all around the world, people use it sometimes to hold on to the land or to create pools like that. And if you do it properly and use logic, it'll stand forever. Yeah.
And so, without the crushed stone, in an area like this that has a lot of clay soils, and the earth is always moving, if there's no crushed stone, it'll shift, or
it'll tend to shift more. I mean, another option is instead of crushed stone, you actually start building your wall lower in the ground
with stone all
with
the way.
Stone and that's what you come across as well, and that's, you know, totally accepted going way back. But you would still find crushed stone. So this wall that was built at St. James was probably built, we're not actually entirely sure, I've been asking everybody, but maybe 150 to 200 years ago. And even then, there's crushed stone between the base stones. It's been really infiltrated with earth, but you could tell that was crushed stone, especially towards the center. So, yeah. I mean, sometimes dry stone masons would bring all the crushed stone left over from their last job to use that as the base in their next job. I've heard of that technique back before there were gravel makers, you know. But yeah, sometimes I will rebuild a wall that way if it's impossible to get to with gravel. You basically just go around the site collecting all the small stones you can, one by one. You fill up a bucket pretty fast, and you go with your dolly and your bucket and fill up the trench slowly with and that's sometimes the most solid foundation, is going from very small, like inch size, to fist size stones. That's one of the most solid foundations you can have.
And how deep would you go into the ground?
So yeah, about a foot to a foot and a half is adequate. You also want it to go out further, you know, wider than your base, by, you know, about 6 inches is ideal. And that way you have that ground in front of the wall won't slowly change, with time. It'll tend to stay put. Yeah. Especially with gravity on your side.
And I mean, there's the beauty side of a stone wall, and the fact that it harmonizes with nature, and maybe moss or other things starts to grow on it, or animals hide in it. So are those the type of things that you like seeing?
Yeah, exactly. He took the words out of my mouth. I mean, it's living stone. That's the way I see it. And when you look at a stone wall that's in harmony with its surroundings, it is, it's a living thing. I kind of see it as a song when I look at my, or any beautifully built stone wall. Like when you step back, I can kind of see the bass and the melody kind of running through it. I kind of like the courses to go up and down a little bit too. I don't really run my courses straight as much. Of course, you have to come up straight at near the top, but that's part of the fun puzzle. And I find that sort of lyrical aesthetic, I guess, it does the same thing as stepping back from a painting to me, and you know, and it's living. It's a living. I've been thinking living stone is a word that keeps popping into my head for the last few years, and you know, especially when they're covered with moss. I mean, that's just, and you see all the different animals that. There was one wall I was working on, and one morning, all these caterpillars started coming out. Actually, I thought of taking pictures of them and sending them to you, because you would be able to identify the butterfly probably like that.
Anyways. Very cool, very cool.
So I realized, wow, this wall is a habitat for... because it does allow small things to crawl in and out. Chipmunks love them, you know, I mean, that's... one up against cats, basically, is chipmunks always have dry stone walls to run to.
And I imagine snakes.
Snakes, yeah. Exactly. I was building a wall last year, and I took a picture of it, actually. A snake's head just peering out, and it probably loved it. It was just beneath the capstone, after the capstone had been, you know, roasting in the sun all day. And it was probably like a toasty... 40 degrees under that capstone. Or
something. I love it.
It's just like, and its tongue was, I have a great picture of it. I don't know if they need to actually cool. Do they cool themselves with their tongue?
I think they do. They are overheating, that is one way that they, because I don't think they can sweat.
Okay.
So, and they sense temperature with their tongues.
Right.
And I think they smell the air with their tongues.
Maybe it was smelling me.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy.
Stinky Mason.
Well, we're going to take a break for some music soon, but maybe before that, you know, I mean, obviously somebody might be listening and might have a stone wall that they want some work done on. So
right.
So what would you, how would they get in contact with you?
How would you get in contact with Facebook, I guess, or phone number? I don't know. I'm kind of old school. 514-568-5086 is my number. Yeah, and sometimes I just actually look at someone's wall to see, you know, what they may do 4 or 5 years down the line, or sometimes it's fun just to hear the history if they know it, and help them diagnose what it needs, you know?
For sure.
If it's
And the question I did want to ask you before we go to a little music break is, I know you've done sculptures before for people like on their properties, and sculptures using stone. Sometimes you use cement, I guess. But how did you approach those situations?
Yeah, well,
just mention a particular case.
The sculpture, I think that I mean, relates the most to dry stone is a dry stone sculpture, which was it was at an interesting time. Birth was coming in my family, and my father was on his way out, and I built this spiraling dry stone sculpture with the help of my lovely partner, Bryony. She helped me identify the shape that I needed to build. Yeah, and I was thinking kind of like, you know, when you see ferns unfurling or snails, they just have that spiral in them. Really helped me to figure out, but I wasn't really sure what I was going to build. Thankfully, who I built it for was happy with it, and for me, I didn't realize how therapeutic it was to build that sculpture at that time. But it was ended up being a beautiful piece that I love to go and have a scotch with the client once a year. I sit in his yard and have a scotch, and we have a look at actually three sculptures I built for him. The other ones, one of them was metal, and the other one was metal and wood. But the dry stone one was the first one that I built for him, and had my father's favorite constellation around it, which is still being maintained by the client. It was done with little river stones, and if they ever get moved by a squirrel or something, he puts them back. And yeah, I felt very, very lucky that he was open to having me sort of turn his garden into a sculpture garden at very key times. That one in particular, a very key time in my life. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break for some music and maybe a station ID and that kind of thing. You are listening to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we're talking with Chris Riddall, who is a dry stone mason in the local area. And we're going to continue talking with Chris after we play some music and maybe a station ID and some ads. So I've played this tune before on the show, and I like to play it again, and that's Black River Swamp by Link Wray.
Oh, and yeah.
Link Wray, of course, is credited in that documentary, I think called Rumble.
Or
yeah, about the coming up with the first kind of rock and roll riff. And I can't remember the song now. I think it's Rumble.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but he did this other album in like 1971, which was not so rocky, more rootsy, folky. And supposedly a lot of people, when they heard the album, they were used to his kind of rockabilly side, and they were like not so into this new album. But this album to me is like his best album and the most. And he basically recorded it with his brother at this farmhouse, and they use all kinds of different techniques to record things. And it's very rootsy. So this is Black River Swamp by Link Wray.
Yeah. Suzuki, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Information to grow the brain.
And welcome back to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. And before the ads and station ID there, you heard Link Ray and the tune Black River Swamp. And Black River Swamp is from this great album from, I guess it's 1971, somewhere around there. I highly recommend it. And I think the album is just called Link Ray. It's a self-titled album. And so we've been talking to Chris, or Christian Riddell, who is a dry stone mason and a dry stone masonry, so building walls just with stone, not with any other material, you know, so not with cement. He's, of course, an environmental approach to building and, of course, doesn't really have any waste products. And
you're not replacing it every few years, like you find with Unistone.
That's it.
You know,
that's it. It's very durable. And so we've been talking all about it during the whole show here today on Equilibrium, and we're going to talk about it some more right now.
Okay.
And so what was the question I was going to ask you again? You were talking about
fitting into molds, kind of,
right?
And yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of of course, I didn't know about dry stone masonry when I was a young teen. I mean, I discovered it near the end of my teens. But, you know, I was a hyper, I like to play. I really like to get a sweat on. I need to feel those endorphins from running or you know, that kind of thing. And you see so many kids like that. And, you know, I could sit still when I was drawing or doing artwork, but, you know, reading and trying to understand information through that, I think it's kind of abstract to read about something. I do a lot better watching a master and, you know, learning by watching and feeling and moving and doing. And our education system is so geared towards, you know, I was worried when I was a kid. I was like, what am I going to do? You know, I never really had very good marks until I studied visual arts. But you kind of wonder what you're going to do. And sometimes I'm just so thankful that I found something physical that also satisfies your creative side that, you know, I believe everybody has. And it's very fulfilling to complete a puzzle and step back and look at it. And, you know, sometimes I just feel very lucky for, you know, the landscapes and the gardens I end up in. And, I guess, you know, people want somebody who will respect that too, and add to it, or, you know, so it's a beautiful mutual benefit when those people find you. And, you know, it's very personal. It's their garden, and it's kind of part of the fun of being a small business owner, you know, an entrepreneur. There's a certain sort of thrill to the day of, you know, can I get this done today? Or am I going to be happy? Or are they going to be happy with everything? And yeah, just sticking to what you love so much, and try not to forget that, you know. Sometimes you get a little worried when you're behind with that, when you're not on budget type thing, but I kind of just forget about that. I've forgotten about that now for a while. And if you go over, it's, you know, it's the way it is. You have to just, you're going to be looking at it for the next 50 years, or I am, every time I go look. So,
and in Hudson, I mean, you work a lot in Hudson. There's a lot of Hudson that looks like it's come out of Scotland.
Right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of those. Yeah. There's a lot of nice walls, actually. You know, sometimes they've been forgotten about for years, and they're just running through the woods where it was a farm, and around, you know, also the western tip of Montreal, like we're right there. Senneville is right there as well. And they're, every time I see those walls in the woods, you just picture somebody placing those there, you know, 200 years ago, or, I mean, it gives me goosebumps when I think about it. It's probably just a farmer just clearing his land and or her land and placing those stones, and now they're there for everyone to see, and they're kind of part of the woods now. Or I mean, ideally you don't let trees grow up through your dry stone walls, so that's,
and that can happen, I guess.
That can happen. That's usually what takes a wall out that's been properly built, is that, you know, a tree grew up next to it. So you can allow trees to grow near a dry stone wall, just not within, you know, 6 feet. It's best to keep it even a little further away.
And you know, the funny thing I find is, you know, there's parts of the West Island, like Senneville, you were just mentioning, near where the Morgan Arboretum is. And you find that there are these spots where they cleared the land for the farming, mm-hmm. and then they piled the stone off to the side, and then often that's where you find the oldest trees. Like they didn't cut down all the trees in between the fields. They kept that for a windbreak or whatever. And I know there's this one extremely, I don't know how old it is, but it's a bitternut hickory in Senneville, kind of on the edge of the Arboretum, between the field that Jardine Carrier uses and another field near Pullen's Pasture, if you know that.
Right.
And it's like there's quite a few old trees along that old pile of rocks, and there's this massive bitternut hickory growing almost like right in the middle of that old stone wall or pile of rocks, and it's the oldest one I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be, it could be over 300 years old, yeah. Maybe so, it's the oldest one in Quebec.
Wow. Planted by a squirrel or a chipmunk 300 years ago, because they often do that. They'll hide, when you're restoring a wall, you'll find these caches of nuts inside. Sometimes I picture a little chipmunk kitchen with like a little table and a tea set. No. it's like their home. And what you do if you want to restore a wall that has a tree, of course, like that, especially, wow, that tree, you don't cut it down. Obviously, you can build around the tree, but you'll build a little roundabout if you want to keep a wall there. So sometimes that's what you do in that situation. But yeah, you'll see things springing out of walls all the time. And that's the only thing that you take out. Everything else can go in and out, but if you leave it there, it will destroy the wall. So you can take it out. What I'll do is I'll go and plant it. If I'm, obviously, I mean, anything I pull out, I feel like is my family.
For sure.
Yeah.
Wow. And you were saying that during the break when we were just talking that there's not a lot of stonewallers and it's not something that is kind of promoted in the society. I mean, the trades is not really promoted in society in general. We're kind of, as at least when I think of Canadian society, we're turning everybody into, you know, linear learners who are supposed to sit at computer desks all day long in whatever job they do. And there is this problem, I think, on the horizon, if we're not already there, where there aren't enough people in the trades or not enough people doing that kind of manual work, which should not be frowned upon in any way, shape, or form.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. It's kind of a lost art. I mean, that's the way that people have referred to it. But there's actually the Dry Stone Walling Association of Canada, which is out of Ontario more. But there is kind of a revival of it. I guess I felt that before there was a great revival, I guess, way back in the 90s when it seemed like there was really no dry stone wallers that I knew of anyways. And it's what will happen is, you know, a chain link fence goes up instead, or you know, something else will go up. It's not as beautiful. It's also a lot cheaper, I guess, to put up a chain link fence. But, you know, ideally everybody knows how to dry stone wall and restores their own wall. Just, you know, if they have a garden, I think it's cool to learn. It's not really for everyone. Sometimes people get very frustrated and very sore very quickly, but, you know, it's about knowing how to move, the stones properly and how to lay them. And it's kind of, you know, it's nice because sometimes people do know what it is and they'll almost stop and bow down or take their hat off and say, oh, nice. You know, other people sort of think that I'm just a mason, which there's nothing wrong with just being a mason, but it's a different, it feels like you're down on the ground more and you're not kicking up as much noise or dust or, you know, just the sound of your chisel and the birds and, the pace of the day, the sun rising, the sun setting, and you sleep really well. I think that's what really made me fall in love with it.
And I mean, there are some properties where they'll have one of these types of walls that will go on for, I don't know, a kilometer or is that true?
Yeah. Well, there's one that I helped build out on the 201 Montée-la-Vigne near the border of Rigaud and St. Marthe. And that, I can't remember exactly how long it is now.
But it's long.
It's really long. I mean, you drive and drive and drive. And we actually rebuilt that. I was there for the rebuild because the client had it built for a while, but it wasn't really built properly. So we actually took it apart in the fall, various sections, and we would put a tempo shelter over it, three other dry stone masons and myself, and we would rebuild it over the winter with the stones tying in deeper than they were in the first attempt.
So you can work in the winter under the right conditions.
You can. There's no mortar, so it's really whatever temperature the worker can withstand. The tempo shelter, and there was even a heater. But when I was working there alone, sometimes I would turn the heater off and just work on the sunny side of the tent, open up the flap and let the solar heat it up. And also lets the dust out, because you do kick up a bit of dust when you're chipping stone. Yeah. There's a lot of chipping.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's 11:56 a.m., and I know we want to play a tune. It's actually a tune that you, Chris, have selected to finish the show. And so it's been great to have you on the show. And maybe just give your phone number one more time if people are interested in contacting you about dry stone walls.
Sure. Yeah. My number is 514-568-5086.
And we've been talking to Chris, or Christian Riddall, who is a dry stone mason, and he works in the Montreal area, primarily in the western part of the Montreal area, West Island and Off Island. And he's been a stone mason, a dry stone mason, for almost 30 years. So it's been great to have you on the show. My name is Ryan Young. So you can always email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca with suggestions or comments. You can follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/equilibriumckutmontreal. And we're going to play you this song called Fountain by
Ake Beka.
And this is a reggae tune?
Yeah, from St. Croix. Ake Beka, Von Benjamin.
Nice. From the
Rest in Peace.
From the album Hail the King. So enjoy that here on Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Traveling on behind, stagnant on ahead. Chasing blondie, acquirement front with the nations of a lead and hunt. Inventions to dominate the resource mountain. And pursuit of happiness, put power priority. Utilitarian ease, gadgets of luxury. Could this be the engine in the animosity? When poverty see people prospering leisurely. A culture edge, modernist meds. Traveling on behind, stagnate on the end. In chasing blood, the acquirement front. Which took nation ago, lead and hunt. Inventions to dominate the resource fountain. Sharing immediacy, large benefit for all humanity. Bring the cutting edge of creativity to the liberty that make work easy. For this we know science do admirably, symmetrical, harmonious with dignity. Love, life, and see the fruit and reward of responsibility. Just to get the outcome you fight hard to see. Numbers are unemotionally. They do stabilize policy. And they do jeopardize in delinquency. Yes. Numbers are unemotionally. They do stabilize policy. They do jeopardize in a delinquency. The pursuit of happiness put power priority. Utilitarian ease, gadgets of luxury. Could this be the engine in the animosity? When poverty see people prospering leisurely. Leisurely. The king says sharing immediacy. Large benefit for all humanity. Bring the cutting edge of creativity to the liberty. Things that make work easy. For this we know science too admirably. Symmetrical, harmonious with dignity. Oh,
circles around. You are this.
You're listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.